We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And tonight, we have a big game in a few hours. It's an early start, 4 p.m. Pacific, against the Indiana Pacers. Third game of a six-game road trip. And guys, I don't want to, you know, count chickens before they're hatched, but I think that if the Lakers can get a win tonight, a even nine-game winning streak is not that far away. Last three games of the road trip are Brooklyn, Toronto, and Washington, none of whom are playing for any playoff positioning at all. And so Lakers have a big opportunity tonight, but they play a team, the aptly named Indiana Pacers. They are in constant attack mode, D. And so I would love to talk about, Lakers have played a couple of very memorable regular season games against them. Talk to me about what the top line items are on your mind.
So the Lakers just saw them. And the Pacers' speed and the nature of their relentless attacking, I'm not saying it caught the Lakers off guard, but it definitely created an environment where the Lakers were like, oh, this is new. I'm not sure they ever really got fully comfortable with how fast the Pacers were playing and how quickly they attacked. But what I'm hopeful about in this game, Mike, is that the fact that they did just play them and it is so recent that they will be adjusted to it more. The two players who I'm most, I don't want to say concerned about, but that stand out to me the most are obviously Haliburton, who did not have a great game when the Lakers played last week, and Pascal Siakam, who did have a great game. Like, you look at the final game stats and AD had that monster game, 36 and 20 rebounds or however many rebounds he had. Go look at Siakam's stat line. It's basically exactly the same. He had 36 points and a ton of rebounds and was just awesome. And I'm looking at those two as the drivers of the Pacers, just verve, and the Lakers needing to really be locked in on those two guys especially.
Yeah. Up close and personal, it was a very weird Haliburton game. And he just was like, he was playing like Lonzo Ball back when he played for the Lakers for a while, where you'll advance the ball, get rid of it quickly. That's fine. Keep the offense going. Let other guys shoot because they have shooters, not looking for his own shot at all, coming off of screens. And he was just a non-threat for most of the game. Then he hit a couple of threes in garbage time when Indiana was trying to make that huge comeback late. But he just was not the same. And I think this has been partly what he's been since his injury. But then I saw him play against the Clippers the next game, and he looks a lot more like Tyrese Haliburton, where it looked like he had found some of that swerve back, that he had kind of gotten going in that way. And so I think that's just something to monitor. And if I had to guess, that he's going to look more like that level of Tyrese Haliburton, and that creates a whole different level of problems for the Lakers. So I'm kind of keeping an eye out on that one. The player that, you know, Darius just identified that really was hurting the Lakers, though, when it wasn't Haliburton, was Pascal Siakam. And I am interested to see how much the Lakers have Anthony Davis still out on Miles Turner versus, you know, somebody else being out there on Turner so that AD can deal with Siakam, because AD is the perfect player to deal with Siakam. Obviously, he has to, you know, run and get back, but Siakam wants to get all the way to the rim, period. He might pull up for a fadeaway in the middle of the paint if he doesn't have that drive, but most people can't keep him from getting there. Anthony Davis can, and I just wonder how, when you do have to worry so much about the Halliburton screen roll, that becomes more difficult to do. And so I think it's hard to do both those things. It's one of the reasons why the Pacers are so effective at scoring, because it's just difficult to take away all the different options they have, even if they're not just running down your throat. So I do think that this is a very difficult game for the Lakers, particularly having beaten the Pacers twice this season, and, you know, emphatically so in both of those games, the in-season tournament final, and then this one where they score 150 points, their most points since 1987. There's going to be a lot going for Indy in terms of this isn't happening again. And, the Halliburton thing being the focal piece for me, like, is he going to change his mindset in attack? And then how do the Lakers deal with that and Siakam's attack?
Yeah, this is a great fundamental question that the Lakers are going to have to face. And I think that on a broader sense, one of the things that we're going to have to solve is how do we free up AD to solve problems that are not pick and roll coverages, right? So Siakam is a great example of this, is that Rui can't guard him. And Siakam's a really good player. There are a lot of guys that can't guard Siakam, but Rui can't really do it. Although I was hoping to have these conversations earlier in the year, but how to work around disadvantage. I think there are still some things on the table that we can do to work with what Rui can and can't do as a perimeter defender. But Siakam's really good, and he's an athlete of a similar size and is just in constant attack mode, runs the floor really well. I think he's a tough matchup for Rui. And so then it becomes, do you want LeBron to help on this problem, or do you want AD to help on this problem? D, against a guy like Miles Turner, I think you have a little more leeway because he's not as much of a role guy. He likes to pop so much. And he hurt us too in that last game with those threes. And so I think you can put Rui or LeBron on Turner. But then it becomes a question of, that's when you go to Halliburton and be like, oh, you're putting our pick and roll combo, you're going to have Rui or LeBron on him. Now it's a pick and roll with Halliburton. What are you doing there? Lakers probably switch that. But I'm just curious, like, in a broader sense, like, how do we free up AD to help resolve these issues?
I think part of it is hoping Turner doesn't hurt you the same way he hurt you the last game, right? And so they were trying to keep AD as a helper to help against Siakam and to help against Halliburton. And part of that idea is, well, Miles Turner, go make five threes tonight then, if that's what you want to do. And the Lakers did a very similar thing in the in-season tournament, and Turner couldn't connect on his outside shot at all, right? And so this next game, the one that happened last week, Turner was connecting, and he got into a rhythm, and I thought it was Turner's play along with Siakam's play that actually had the Pacers in the game, considering how poorly Halliburton was playing overall, especially as a jump shooter and his sort of indecisiveness as a scorer. The Lakers have beat the Pacers twice playing a very, like, the exact same game. And so is it on the Lakers now to change? Or that, is it right. on...
When you were saying that earlier, Mike, about how, like, oh, well, the Lakers beat him emphatically twice, and therefore Indiana has a lot going for him. Like, in my mind, just the way my mind works, I'm like, sounds like a good reason for us to do it a third time, right? Like, if history is a guide, the Lakers have some tools to attack them, right? And so I do appreciate us starting from the, how do you defend the Pacers? Because they're so good on offense. And, like, you can do everything right and run. And they still might score, and that can be dispiriting in its own way. But I just feel like, again, this game is a gateway to a possible 9-game winning streak, and boy, could we use one of those. So I don't know, man. I'd love to see us put on our track shoes, you know?
You know, Pete, I hate when you put me in the spot where I feel like I have to throw a little bit of cold water on stuff. But, you know, this, yes, the teams that the Lakers are playing aren't good coming up, but assuming wins has
Mike
not—
Mike and I are scarred.
Mike and I are scarred by this. We had this conversation earlier this year. Mike, remember,
if Pete wasn't, if we talk on the about pod? The damn Sacramento loss again, look, if we play Sacramento again, but I might be about to put a prohibition on the Sacramento game. We need a therapy session about that game. But yes, there are scars here.
Yeah. No, I mean, this, so for me, my scars are not, these aren't scars. This is just years of being an NBA
for arenas. Sure. For sure.
You know, it's got nothing to do with like worrying about, I don't go to bed worrying about Domantas Sabonis. Trust me. I think about from a Lakers. Okay. I'm about to do it again. So stop. For Indiana, it's not so much that like, oh, they have what it takes to stop the Lakers. They don't. It's that I look at this more like a playoffs series, like game one, game two, because the teams are pretty close in terms of what their overall talent is. Like, I think the Lakers are better. I would pick them to beat them in a series, but like, they're not a team that the Lakers are going to sweep in the postseason. I think that Indiana gets one because of their style and all that. So that's all. That's where this is coming from for me. It's just that it's very difficult to beat a team in this kind of in a home and away series, which this essentially is. That's all. But in terms of like the ways that the Lakers can attack the Pacers, there are many. Which is why I started on the defensive end and just thinking about Halliburton specifically, but they're like last year, if you guys remember how the game ended last year, it's a really tight game and Halliburton basically calls for a switch to have Anthony Davis on mm-hmm. him and Anthony Davis swats him and the Lakers win the game. And so the Lakers, like, they do have answers, and I tend to want to go where Darius had suggested, or at least was alluding to, which is Miles Turner. If you make seven threes this game, and I usually don't like that. I don't like the sort of let a guy shoot a bunch. And I certainly want to contest, but I would rather have that be the outlet than the Siakam downhill or even the Halliburton getting a ton of shots up and getting into a rhythm. Because, you know, Miles Turner is a really good player. But I just think that if that shot doesn't go in, then the Lakers are in business, in pretty quick.
One of the things that I'll be looking for is something similar that happened in the Clippers game, guys, which is that Rui took the harder defensive assignment of Kawhi for most of the game. And then it was LeBron who took very strategic possessions defensively against Kawhi at the end of the game. And I will be interested to see if something similar happens this game with Siakam, right? And so the interesting thing about Siakam and the guys that Rui defend well is that Rui is good against bigger, stronger guys who have the ability to get downhill, but use their strength in order to muscle through guys. Siakam is a bigger, stronger guy, but he's an angular player and he relies much more on his quickness and second jump ability in order to beat a guy. And that's the sort of player that Rui is going to struggle with generally. And so I think Rui's going to get the first matchup against Siakam again. But I also think that LeBron is going to play a bigger role in defending Siakam this game. And I think the Lakers are likely going to keep AD on Turner and as a player who can provide secondary help in order to come clean up the backboards.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to look at this game from a slightly different angle.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I think one of the Lakers' weaknesses is it's hard to quantify. It's not really a personnel thing, or I mean, it is to a degree, but or a scheme thing, but it's more our ability to hemorrhage a 12-0 run in 90 seconds and just have these stretches that are very low energy, very low attentiveness, that I think the Pacers are uniquely built to be a team that maybe it's not 12-0, maybe it's 18-2, maybe it's 24-4 type of run, you know? And so it's not, you know what I'm saying? It's not really about a scheme, or it is about the guys on the floor to a degree, but how do we avoid that in this game?
I think it's going to come down to the Lakers offense, Mike. And we started a lot to talk about how the Pacers can attack the Lakers, but the Pacers have an Anthony Davis problem. And so we talked a lot about AD at the beginning defensively and how important he's going to be. AD didn't play the last game. And the language that was used on the injury report actually concerned me a fair amount. Like, I was hoping it would be something like, you know, he's been on the injury report before. So if he's going to miss a game, I would actually want him to be on the injury report with the same stuff he's been on the injury report for. And coming off of the second night of a back-to-back where he played 52 minutes, like, ah, it all makes sense. But he had like a hyperextension in his knee. That's not the best idea coming into a game against the Pacers, but how are we feeling about AD's health? And if we're feeling okay about AD's health, Indy has an AD problem in general. He kicks Miles Turner's butt and has multiple times. And so I think offensively, the way you counter against Indy going on a big run, the way that Pete said, is that you attack Indy in the same way that they're trying to attack you, leveraging your advantages over them.
Well, AD is listed, as you mentioned, as questionable with the hyperextended knee, and that is a concern for me. And it, just in general, he's been questionable a lot this year, but it's been questionable in the context of he's been managing like the same thing for a while. And this being something that clearly was bothering him during the game that he had to get worked on, and then was listed as a new injury, at least in the classification of it, right, with a knee hyperextension. That's not something that I just am automatically saying that guy plays the next game with. Now, the flip side to that is that the Lakers played a back-to-back, and after he had that knee worked on, even if he was moving okay, I think by the second overtime, he had played 52 minutes, and they played the next night after getting in at 3 a.m. You know, so I think that was sort of a, and it was against a Memphis team that was extremely shorthanded, and you had LeBron James coming back, and I think that the collective thought was that LeBron could carry all boats, and he did. So that's allowing for some optimism of thinking, okay, maybe it was just sore. He needed a couple extra days to work on it, you know. But it's not like it's going to be. It's not like it's a weeks or a month type thing. Like, it is more of a day to day thing. But that's all speculation. We have no information whatsoever on it. The Lakers did not practice yesterday. They're not having shoot around today. They've just been trying to rest from the last game. So, and I haven't, you know, poked around and buzzed around the training staff or anything. That's been things have just evolved a little bit, or devolved a little bit in the way from like where you can get information. And so I think that for a lot of people, it's just more about stopping to ask and kind of we'll wait and see once we get to the arena, because those answers have not been coming. And which I get. So bottom line, he is a question mark. He really is. He's truly questionable. And if he doesn't play, we're having a different conversation. Yeah. And that's part of what I was pushing back with Pete's. The Lakers are just going to win every game for the rest of the year from earlier, or at least this road trip. But yeah, enough about AD in that context. I just, you know, I don't know that Indy is going to be as easy to beat as Memphis if AD can't play.
Oh,
I think
of course
the hope is that he can, certainly. And if Yeah, of course. And if he does, then we can kind of proceed. I think it's worth having conversation, assuming that he is playing. I just wanted to really acknowledge that it's not guaranteed.
No, and thank you for that. And obviously, it's a completely different game, D.
Yes.
When he has been questionable this year, he has generally played. And so let's continue to have the conversation through the lens of if AD does play. If he doesn't, I don't see us having much of a chance. Do you have thoughts on an AD-less team tonight, D?
Yeah, my thoughts are get ready for the next game.
Yeah.
That's those are my thoughts, right? Like, they beat Milwaukee without LeBron. Anthony Davis is a
central figure to the Lakers defense, particularly against the Pacers. He is fundamental to being at the point of attack against Haliburton, while also being a helpful player to deter shots at the basket against the guys who attack the rim. He's also a guy who then is going to score on the other end against Miles Turner and force your hand in order to show help and help in ways that open up the rest of the court for the Lakers offense. Anthony Davis is a critical figure in whatever success the Lakers are going to have in general, but against the Pacers, he is a very specific and targeted problem for them, and the game plan flows through him on both sides of the court. If he is unable to play against the Pacers, I see the Lakers having a very difficult time, and it actually wouldn't surprise me if the game wasn't that competitive.
For sure. And the one thing I would say in Mike, you made the argument earlier about how, like, sometimes in a playoff series, a team will be up 2-0 and, you know, going back to the other team's arena or from game one to game two, where the other team has to win a lot more than one team has to win. I think that's slightly different in our circumstances, because one thing I've kind of marveled at from looking at the standings, it's like, this is super simplified, but it's like LeBron's team and KD's team and Steph's team are all in a, oh crap, we might miss the playoffs type of last 10 games of the season. And so, like, I watched the Phoenix-Denver game the other night, and KD was amazing on both ends of the floor. He blocked five shots and was just really disruptive, and then just a bucket on the other end. And so having three of the all-time greats kind of in a last 10 games of the regular season, crap, we got to go right now, I think that's kind of cool. But it's also perilous for the Lakers, because it's those teams. The other team's got Luka Doncic, and then the other team is 4-0 against us this season and have some unique problems that that we face against them. So, Mike, I'm usually not that into the standings, but this is a big game for us in ways that may not exist in terms of the same level of, like, we need to win this game.
No, I get what you're saying. Totally. This falls into the whole, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, this whole like, if the Lakers go 7-2, then Phoenix has to go 5-4, and Sacramento has to go 5-5, and Dallas has to go 4-6, like that. And a win against the Pacers could flip is too strong for it, but could, you know, really push the Lakers in a way that I think the assumption going into this whole stretch, these 10 games, was either Milwaukee or Indiana, probably going to be a loss. And if neither one of those is a loss, then the whole, like, if 7-2 becomes much more palatable. Mm-hmm. So for sure. But I will still posit that even if the Lakers do lose this game, like, the math is still relatively in play there.
Sure.
With Phoenix. It's just that Denver sat Murray, but Murray has been missing a couple of games, like with knee soreness. So I don't think they just sat him to sit him. And then they, you know, Phoenix does play pretty well against Denver. They just have, like, one of the ways to beat Phoenix or to beat Denver is just keep scoring on them. And, you know, Phoenix, when KD and Booker are on, are able to. They did that in the playoffs, you know, last year a little bit. So that matchup has kind of been a bit of an Achilles heel for Denver. Now, Phoenix goes into Oklahoma City, and last that I had checked is that Shea wasn't going to play. So that does, in the way that the Lakers beat Milwaukee, and that even if the Lakers do beat Indiana, I think that we were counting on Phoenix to lose at least one of those two games. And, you know, they still could. They still could lose at OKC. OKC almost beat Houston without Shea the other day. But that becomes a much more winnable game, especially if KD decides, okay, hold on, I'm not trying to get caught by the Lakers here. So this is part of where what the Lakers have dug them, the hole that they've dug themselves into, right? And that even with Phoenix having this monstrously difficult schedule, if they're really treating the games like playoff games, then and the other teams who are really good but aren't, because they're not as desperate because they're in the second seed or the fourth seed, then that's to Phoenix's advantage. And that increases the importance on the Lakers going 7-2 instead of 6-3, because they really might need to.
Why can't we go 9-0, Mike?
It's just where they're
at. Why can't we go 9-0, Mike?
I mean, they, before this stretch, right, what's the most consecutive games they had won all year? Four.
Uh-huh.
So
three.
You're basically asking for 11, I think. Right.
We got Gabe Vincent coming back. There should be not 12. A single minute given to a guy who can't really play. I think that there are going to be a lot of lineups where the worst offensive player on the court is still a really good offensive player. And Darius, what were the stats that you were giving us before the pod about the Lakers offense?
Let's take a break here. Pizza, you were asking me
what the stats were. I'll share them in three things as well that will go up this afternoon. The Lakers have basically been one of the best offenses in the league since the turn of the calendar year. They're first in points per game. They're first in overall field goal percentage. They're second in three-point field goal percentage. They're fifth in offensive rating. They're like all of these things. They're first in true shooting percentage. They're third in effective field goal percentage. They are basically an elite offense. Analysts and folks who follow the league, Mike, they've been talking about the top offenses in the league for a while as being teams like Boston and the Pacers. And that's still true. When you look at the top of the league since the turn of the year, the other teams that are at the top of the league are the Pacers. They are the Celtics. But right there with them are the Los Angeles Lakers. So when we talk about the Lakers' ability to win games or what their strategy is or how they could potentially win more games in a row now than what they have in the last three seasons combined, right? Like, I think the last time they had a 4 or 5 game winning streak was the season they won the championship, right? That was 5 years ago or
might
four
have been
years
21.
Ago.
I'll go
That's
look.
A long time ago. And so we ended the pod talking about this yesterday, Mike, but the Lakers playing their best basketball now is certainly required, and they're winning on offense. And it's a lot, I don't want to say it's a lot easier, but you can win games this way and put together a string if you're able to score on opponents.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. That's something that it's sort of a flip of the mentality, but that's part of why I'm excited about Gabe Vincent's return is that the ball, there isn't going to be a guy on the court a lot of times that isn't a good offensive player. And I think that you can get wins that way, Mike. And I think that, you know, against a team like the Pacers, it's more about not letting up. And I do say the 9-0 remark tongue in cheek, Mike. I know it's a low chance, but I do think that if they do get a win today, and it's totally possible they've gotten two emphatic ones against them, then there's a gateway to a really good thing going.
Yeah. So my answer to why they wouldn't do it is that both LeBron and AD are banged up. And this has been the core. This has been what's happened for the last several years, and why they haven't gone on streaks. That even they've lost to teams that they're in theory better than. If you just get them on a court and everybody's healthy, because like, is LeBron going to play in the back to back to close this this trip where it's Toronto and the team's going to get into Washington at like 4 a.m. and he continues to acknowledge that his ankle really is an issue. And so that those are more of the things. It's not that I'm saying if you line up the Lakers next to the Nets, knowing that the Lakers need to win the game and the Nets don't, that the Lakers should win the game. You know, that's part of it. Part of it is that the season finale would be a day game at New Orleans. And it just totally depends upon if the Pelicans are locked into the four or not.
For sure.
Or if they are, if For they sure. get home court advantage, if they win that game against the Clippers or the Mavs. You know, so it's just a lot of stuff depends on it. Is AD or are AD and LeBron going to play in that back to back? Actually, sorry, that's not a back to back. There's a home back to back, Cleveland and Minnesota. So that's just it's just season stuff. I'm not questioning the Lakers' ability when they play their best basketball to beat anybody except for Denver, because I still would pick them to beat Sacramento if they played them again. And now, I just think the whole offense and the narrative and the early in the season, the Lakers couldn't score. What I have not heard as much is lately, like, well, the Lakers can't get stops. But the Lakers are 23rd in defense in the last 15 games. Like, their defense hasn't been that good. But and this is where I push back against just the defensive rating and offensive rating discussion, is that, like, they're related. These things are always related. And it just the whole point is the team has to be playing a certain level of overall basketball where the defense can slip some. If the offense is this good and early in the season, you don't have to hit a ton of shots if the defense is as good as it was. So it's just always a balance. And it's not just like the Lakers are not one of those teams, though, where you can just dismiss them. Oh, their shooting's not good enough. I've always pushed back against that. Always pushed back against that. They don't have enough shooters like that. I have found that it's the requisite 34% versus 38% type thing. But I just think that the balance between the offense and the defense is something I'd like to see a little bit closer merged. And that's, you know, that's difficult with the roster, with Vanderbilt out, you know, even with Wood out in that size. And Vincent is a question mark. Like, we know what he was in the finals last year, but it wasn't like he was amazing in the very limited games that he played this year. And he's going to have to come in and play with groups that haven't played together and that are probably small. So I think that there are ways that it could be a boost, but I'm not sure. It's just an automatic positive relative to the rhythm that they have overall right now. So I'm kind of curious about that, as opposed to this is going to be a 100% guaranteed shot in the arm.
So the units I see him playing with, at least, and this is a great point that you make, Mike, I think there are obviously ways that he can be inserted into the rotation where it's like, if it's at the expense of Jackson Hayes, who plays a completely different position, but if he gets pushed out, then your whole group's too small in some groups. But I do think that the units he'll be playing in are a lot of those groups where it's like, oh, we just did give up a 10-0 run in way too little a time. Those parts of the game where it kind of can erase a lot of the good work that's done. There's that group to start the second quarter. It can be the end of the first as well. That's kind of where I envision Gabe Vincent playing. I said the other day, I think he's kind of a natural fit with D'Lo, but I do think he brings some level of, on both ends of the floor, just a little more reliability on both ends that I think is going to be super helpful. And again, may not work out that way, but I want, that's why I brought up that point of like, don't give up a huge run in a short period of time and they're like, take measures against that. I think that that's going to be a big part of tonight's game.
Yeah, I would also say too that I have big picture concerns about the Lakers' perimeter defense and whether or not they can match up effectively. What I'm less concerned about is their team playing hard and playing smart on critical defensive possessions. We saw the Lakers really lock down defensively in that Bucks game against a very good Bucks offense. And we've seen that over and over again against high leverage games and high leverage moments where the Lakers are, we're in it and we're going to get stops. And that has been resulting in wins, but it doesn't always have to result in a win for me to feel like they're ready to compete defensively. Like, Mike, you bring up the point that they are in the 20s defensively over their last 15 games. Over their last 10 games, their defensive rating is like 115.8 or something like that. And for the season, it's like 115.3. And so over this stretch of games, they've basically been like middle of the pack.
What's the offensive rating during that time?
Defense? Offensive rating over the last 10 games.
120.1, fourth.
Yeah, 120.1, they're fourth. Lakers have a net rating of plus 4.3 over the last 10 games, which is top 10 in the league, a slot ahead of the Thunder. So my bigger questions about the Lakers are more like, can you put it together and do you have enough size on the perimeter, on the wing, and are you going to play the right dudes? Vincent helps, I think, in some ways, but also skews the team smaller in ways that give me a bit of a pause.
We have scars from that too.
Yeah, like the lineups you were talking about him playing in next to D'Lo, the other guys next to D'Lo are likely going to be, one of those guys is still likely to be Dinwiddie, unless Gabe comes at the expense of Dinwiddie. And then that's the part of the game at the end of the first quarter where neither LeBron or Rui are in. Who else is in the game?
That to me is when you go to the two big looks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the concern. Is he looks down on the bench and sees Gabe Vincent and Dinwiddie available. Right. And it's like, all right, sorry, Jackson Hayes. You know, back to the one shift.
So who's the lineup? Give me the five that's on the floor in this fear, I suppose.
Well, that's the thing. The other guy is normally Prince there. It's not Hayes. Hayes has been coming in.
Right.
At the start of the second quarter to play with LeBron.
So you're saying three guards, Prince at the four, and then AD?
Yes. And so those groups can win shifts. It's likely going to be on offense. And to me, I trust that Gabe can guard a point guard or a shooting guard pretty much comfortably. On most teams, I feel like he's going to be able to do that. The defensive assignments there that give me pause are, is the power forward a guy who Prince can guard? And is there a wing there that you feel comfortable Dinwiddie defending? Otherwise, Gabe's minutes are going to have to come at the expense of Prince with an elevation of Jackson Hayes. Now, that's two disruptions to the lineup in order to accommodate Gabe Vincent. I'm not saying that that shouldn't be what the Lakers do. And I'm not saying that there aren't good lineups for Vincent to play in. And I'm also not saying that Vincent
can't help. I'm positing, though, that the nature of the Lakers lineups now and who is healthy is now and who their best players are skews smaller, way smaller than what we were comfortable with earlier during the season. Now, I'd also argue the flip side of this. The team is playing so much better on offense now than what they were earlier during the season. And Vincent's fit offensively is like a glove within what the Lakers want to do offensively. And so his ability to hit the ground running on offense, I think, should be relatively high. And if that's the case, Mike, then I think it could be a smoother transition than some of our worst case fears, even within the context of lineup construction.
And this is where I'm going to zoom back out and kind of merge closer to where Pete was starting the pod a little bit. And with urgency, that especially that LeBron's playing with and showing, that papers over so many of these concerns for me, if the lineup's a little bit smaller or if this guy's available, or if that guy's not. Like, so LeBron's urgency alone. And it's been there in every game except for the at Sacramento for the last couple of weeks. And then Anthony Davis, same thing. So those things, plus how everybody else is playing, and, you know, Reeves, who largely has played better all around, and Russell, who continues to shoot the ball well, even if we didn't love the Memphis game for some other reasons. Like, there has been enough to get a lot of wins down the stretch here. And that's been encouraging. And I think that, you know, regardless of what happens in Indiana, while like a win would be huge in terms of catching Phoenix, I'm also kind of not married to what this result is having 100% to do with how they really make that final push through the season, because I just think that this is a very difficult game, but it is winnable, and if they do it, you know, then we're talking about even easier potential scenarios where Phoenix only has to slip up once or twice more. For the Lakers to catch them.
Where we should wrap up here is, like, this is a super important game, but not the end-all be-all game. I would love for the Lakers to get a win here and propel themselves forward. I have loved the attitude that Anthony Davis has had about one game at a time. I have loved the urgency that LeBron has been showing when he's been on the court. And I've loved the togetherness that the team is showing with Austin and Rui and D'Lo and just the whole team really rowing in the same direction. The thing I will say about the last thing I'll say about Gabe is Gabe is not a disruptor. Gabe is a connecting player. He is a role player. He's someone who understands wins and losses, and he's someone who is going to put the team first. In fact, when he has played this season, he has mostly taken his foot off of the gas in terms of usage and the role that he played for the Heat, and has tried to play exactly the way that Dinwiddie's been playing, actually, which is like, let me defend, let me try to move the ball, let me do all of the connecting player role,
just be a pro,
role player things. That could be super helpful. And this isn't to like take shots at Cam Reddish or even Max Christie, but Gabe is a super professional player who understands what the Lakers are trying to do on both sides of the ball. He may not be as good an athlete, he may not have as good a size, but he's going to go out there and do what he's supposed to do. And as the Lakers play these games down the stretch, Pete, that is an ingredient that, when added to all that we've discussed before with LeBron and AD and everyone and else, could help continue to propel the Lakers forward to get even more wins.
All right, we'll wrap up here. You've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell. There's the move. Unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.